Has anyone ever asked you if Kafka is a database? Well, today, my co-host Gwen Shapira and Confluent tech lead Dan Norwood discuss that very question, and they talk about Confluent Control Center, too. It's all in today's episode of Streaming Audio, a podcast about Kafka, Confluent, and the cloud. Welcome back, everyone. Let's get to it.
Welcome back to Ask Confluent, where we answer questions from the internet. I'm your host, Gwen Shapira, and it's been a while, but with me today we have Dan Norwood. And Dan Norwood is really an amazing tech lead who joined Confluent pretty much 4 years ago.
Yeah, just about.
Yeah, and basically built Confluent Control Center from zero to the amazing product that it is today.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been, basically we have a question about Control Center, and I brought the single most qualified person in the universe to answer that.
Yeah, hopefully I can do it.
So we have a bunch of questions and not that much time, so let's get to it. Okay, so the first question is from Martin Kleppmann's keynote in Kafka Summit London 2019, where he talked about, is Kafka a database? And the comment from Mechanical EI is, so Kafka is a database? And so I assume he meant Kafka. And I'm trying to figure out if you watched the keynote or not, because like, is it a question you ask before or after you've watched that? But what do you think? Is Kafka a database?
Yeah, I think like the way I think about it anyhow is like, obviously it's like a messaging platform, and that's how a lot of people use it. But it's also like, it gives you like the basic building blocks to build your own databases. Is sort of an easier way for me to think about it, because like most databases are this like sequential log of changes that people are building up. Kafka, like a compacted topic in Kafka, is
kind of a key value.
It's a key value store stored in a weird way, right? Like not normally the way you'd store it if you're storing it in memory for yourself to query. But it is it's another like view on that sort of data, and so you can also do other stuff on top of it. But
you can build like infinite types of views on top, actually. Like,
yeah,
that's a really nice part.
Right. So like if it's not an RDBMS, doesn't let you do all that sort of stuff. But conceivably you could be building RDBMSs on top of Kafka, which is some of the stuff that like LinkedIn has done with like Espresso and making Postgres go out.
Yeah, that was kind of my first thought. Like, I've used relational databases before. Kafka is clearly nothing like them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the view of Kafka is a building block for a database is actually kind of a good way to think about it, and also 100% the way that Martin Kleppmann really presented it. He said that, hey, if we look at all the things you want out of a database, you want the ACID guarantees, you may want even stronger guarantees like referential integrity, you may want all kinds of easy to query tables that match different data formats. Kafka will not give you all of it out of the box, but he kind of shows how he can build them using Kafka.
Right.
But obviously you have to kind of still build them yourself. So it's not a database in the sense that you have to build a database out of Kafka.
Right. Yeah. It's all the building blocks. So if you have a very like specific use case that you want to try to build a large scalable system around, like it gives you all the pieces to do that.
Yes.
But if you have something that fits into something else that is a database that already scales to what you're using, then that might also be a good product to use.
That's the thing, right? I mean, it gives you the building blocks to do everything yourself, but because you have it, there is a possibility you'll get it wrong.
Right.
And it's obviously not as cheap as taking something off the shelf if it's a good fit. And obviously Kafka is a good fit for the streaming use cases, which there are no really strong alternatives. Okay, the next question is around install and run Kafka with Confluent Control Center. And Tim Berglund basically went through how he installs and runs Confluent Control Center to monitor Kafka. But he showed it using Docker, doing it in your own local laptop. It's a fairly different experience than doing the whole thing in the cloud. So our friend of YouTube, Tusif Zaki, asked, any idea how to start Confluent Control Center with GCP? So let's maybe start by, what is Confluent Control Center and why does Tusif Zaki so excited to use it?
Yeah, sure. So Confluent Control Center is our on-premise solution for people to monitor and manage their Kafka deployments. And so it allows you to monitor and manage however many Kafka clusters that you have out in your system. It also allows you to interact with Connect, use Schema Registry to manage all of your schemas across all of your clusters, as well as interacting with KSQL. So it gives you like a bunch of abilities to like mess around, like write KSQL queries, add connectors, remove connectors, all that sort of fun stuff, as well as giving you sort of insights into how your brokers are running. So
you said that it's on-prem. So he's going to use it in GCP. Could he use it with Confluent Cloud, or does he have to kind of self-manage his own Kafka for that?
Yeah, so you generally are only going to want to run Control Center yourself if you're also managing your own Kafkas. So like I'm imagining maybe he's running his own Kafkas for some reason in GCP.
Maybe and then he likes waking up by alerts at the middle of the night. Who knows?
Maybe. Which is another thing Control Center can help you set up, actually, is a bunch of alerts on the Kafkas that you have that you're running. So if you have like your own deployment of Kafka and you aren't ready to move to our cloud product yet, then Control Center can help you there. So maybe he has his own brokers running and he wants to get some more insights into them. But if you are willing to run on our cloud product instead, then you get quite a few of the features from Control Center already built into the cloud interface.
You get a schema registry and you get KSQL and you get Connect.
Right. And the only things you don't really get are the things that you probably don't want to have
like
to use.
Like waking up in the middle of the night. That's the thing with Confluent Cloud. I wake up in the middle of the night. Yeah. You don't have to.
Right. Like we don't have like the monitoring and the alerting pieces, right? Like the pieces that like we're paying somebody to go do and that you don't have to deal with it.
Yes. Yeah. So we are now getting fairly close to a new Control Center release. Can you give us like a sneak peek of the coolest feature we are looking forward to see? Or is it still secret?
Yeah, I think we have a sort of a revamp of the entire UI. So there are some new features, but a lot of more trying to make it more natural how people interact with, or how people's mental model, how they think about their Kafka deployments. Trying to make it a more natural flow for them to go through the app. So the idea is like when you open Control Center, it used to be it is a little bit difficult to move from cluster to cluster to understand
had to go all the way back to the top.
Right. And you didn't really understand how different services were connected to one another. So you may have like three Kafka clusters and two KSQL clusters on each one of them. And it wasn't quite obvious in the old UI how those things were. There's a bit of a hierarchy there. And now the new navigation system builds that hierarchy into the navigation. So you'll see, like, here's a list of all of my Kafka clusters. Here's the multitude of services running on top of them. And you click on one of those Kafka clusters, and then you can dig through it. So hopefully everybody has a... it's much easier for people to move through the UI.
The thing I really love about having usability as kind of like the top goal for release is that suddenly like release blockers are things like people can't find how to do something, which is definitely not like a traditional release blocker, but it does kind of put our users front and center, which is something I really love. So yeah, I hope all of you will enjoy that. But now to the actual question, how do we start Confluent Control Center with GCP?
Right. So there's a couple of different ways to do this, really. So it sort of depends on how you are launching your services on GCP, because you can just bring up machines. You can log into them. You could run whatever you want. You can have a bunch of, like, there's a multitude of ways to do that. I think probably the easiest way is if you just want to use our Docker images. So in GCP, you can just select the Docker images. You use docker.io/confluentinc/cp-enterprise-control. Anyhow, yeah. A huge block of text right there. You can just use that, and then you set a couple of environment variables. We will also include those. And that'll let you point Control Center at whatever Kafka brokers you have available. So all of our Docker images are maintained. There's some open source repositories that we have that have, the one that Tim uses in this demo that go through and show how to set up all the environment variables and how to get everything connected. So basically, it would just be reusing all of that, but pointing it at your services in GCP.
Yeah, I think the main things to remember is that Control Center actually takes memory. good chunk of it. So pick at the, you know, one of those high mem instance types for your deployment. Otherwise, you'll probably have a bad time. It also by default runs, I think, a lot of threads. I'm keep remembering something like 8 stream processing threads. Yeah. So either get a lot of CPUs or tune down the number of threads. And the last thing, you will want to access Control Center from port 9021. So make sure the port is open between your browser and the GCP. And if you use things like private network environments and firewall-like thingies, then you have to be careful that you can actually do the communication that you need to do. That's usually that's how I fail. I spend the entire day troubleshooting. And it's like, oh, it's the port.
Yep.
In Docker, it's actually even harder, right? Because you have to do port mapping.
Map ports from one to another and get your Docker networking set up right. Yeah.
Yep. I think that's how I end up spending days. Okay. The next question was actually probably the easiest I've ever done at Ask Confluent. CryR responded to Transforming Data Part 1, Apache Kafka Streams API, and said it would be nice to know how to construct K-tables. And we 100% agree. It's kind of important knowledge when you use Kafka Streams to know how to construct K-tables, which means that you have to progress to the next video in the series, Transforming Data Part 2, which before the first minute is over, you will know exactly how to construct a K-table. So we've got you all taken care of. Just continue watching the series and all your questions will be answered. And then the next question is conveniently about Transforming Data Part 2. Too Easy for Mike said, it is a nice video. We agree, it's a nice video. But I don't understand why the CERDAS for value is long. Shouldn't it be a song CERDA because it's a song object? You are 100% correct, Too Easy for Mike, and thank you for your comment. Sometimes we kind of simplify things in a way that's not 100% correct when we copy code to fit into a slide. So I think one of those things happened. One thing you want to keep in mind is that the API actually changed a bit since the time the video was recorded. So I think the best thing is to use the new API, which makes it slightly easier.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to publish a link to an end-to-end example that includes how to do a group by with the CERDAS kind of the correct way. So that's a nice thing about streams these days. When we started, like, those literally. So Dan here was literally the first streams user in the entire world, as far as we know.
Yeah. I was an alpha tester internally. Yeah, all of Control Center, or all the monitoring in Control Center is built on top of streams. So yeah, this is... this is actually like the third or fourth version of this API. It used to be even a little less readable.
Yes. Now, yeah. I think that was also a problem when writing the book. Like every new revision, I have to rewrite the streams chapter basically from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Because I keep getting complaints that, hey, you got your code is crap. You got every API wrong. Is nothing compiled. And I'm like, it was right back then, I swear.
Yeah. Yeah, streams is moving very quickly. And a lot of their iterations have been around trying to actually sort it back to the Control Center, like making things more usable for people so like you don't run into issues like this.
Yeah, I think it is getting way better over time. Although CERDAS are still a continual pain point, I think. But
you can just use KSQL so you don't have to think about CERDAS.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Can you actually do everything that you could do in Kafka Streams in KSQL these days?
I think that there's still some joins that aren't really possible. And then there's some work being done in case right now KSQL has a sort of a bad keying story.
Yeah, that's true.
So you can't have sort of complex data types as keys, but it's also something that they're working on diligently. So
cool. So what about interactive queries? I kind of heard that recently, or not so recently anymore, your team kind of started using those to speed things up.
So Control Center has always used interactive queries, like from the very start. So, and just to give sort of like a level set on what interactive queries are, I guess. So when you start up a Streams application, you can build a table, and it materializes in memory and onto disk using RocksDB. And an interactive query allows you to interactively query that RocksDB instance. And it's constantly being updated in the background by the Streams application. So like when we show you metrics data inside of Control Center, all that data is being live updated into a Rocks database. And then when the browser hits that endpoint, we read out of there to show that. Yeah.
So pretty soon we can expect a blog post into which you explain to the entire world how amazing interactive queries are and how useful they've been.
Yeah, we could talk about doing a blog post. Yeah, there's some really nice things. Right now, Stream sort of same thing we were talking about with is Kafka a database? Right now, like you technically have interactive queries, but using them can be sort of difficult
for similar SERDES issues. I think they merged the HTTP endpoint, though, which is already a huge usability improvement.
Yeah, yeah. Part of the issue is that you need to be able to query across all of your instances.
Yeah.
And then you sort of need to do a scatter gather and then like relay out all the data in the order you want.
That is kind of painful.
Yeah, so all more stuff to make better in next release.
Always stuff to improve, yes. And a question about the last Ask Confluent. It's kind of a long question. I'll jump to the gist of it. Chirag Satasia asks, we're using different machines for Kafka and Zookeeper. What's your recommendation? Should we continue to use Kafka and Zookeeper on different machines, or we should combine them? And that kind of goes to risk appetite versus cost kind of thing. You definitely decrease risk by separating them. Zookeeper needs good access to CPU. It needs to be able to write to disk extremely fast. By having its own machines, you kind of guarantee that Zookeeper and Kafka will never interfere with each other. That's our support recommendation because support try to make you successful and not take any unnecessary risks. You as a person paying for the machines may choose to take more risks. If your Kafka is not super busy, if you have spare CPU, and especially if you have spare disks that can be dedicated just for the Zookeeper transaction log, you could combine them. I hope this description convinces you that you are taking some risk because anything goes wrong with the CPU or the disk, Zookeeper will stop working and your Kafka will stop working. So decide how much you want to pay for extra machines versus pay for downtime. That's basically the calculation we all do all the time. If it's any help in the cloud, it's different machines all the way. Like we have SLAs to meet and our appetite for waking up in the middle of the night is incredibly low. We also have like literally 100 clusters. So the probability that anything will go wrong on one of them is kind of high.
Yeah, one thing maybe to add here is if you have multiple Kafka clusters, you can point them to the same Zookeeper cluster.
Oh, that's a very good point, yes.
So if you have, say, 5 AK clusters, you still can possibly get away with only having one Zookeeper cluster to help manage all of them.
Yeah, that's a good way to have basically the best of both worlds as long as Zookeeper is not super busy.
Right.
The thing to watch out for is like if you create and delete topics at rapid rates at specific points in your life cycle, that's where load on Zookeeper gets a bit tricky. And if you kind of share dev where everyone's always deleting and creating nodes with something that's more production, maybe that's not a good sharing scenario.
Right.
Ask me how I know.
Yeah.
Okay, now we get to the portion of the program where we get to pat ourselves in the back because you guys keep giving us amazing feedback. So Carlos Valencia commented on KSQL introduction, probably the videos that generated the most compliments ever in the history of our YouTube. He said, whoa, thank you for the video. I've been working with Kafka for 1 year. I'm new and I would like to learn a lot of it. Hello from Colombia. Great job. So awesome that you started learning Kafka, Carlos from Colombia. And we hope that all our videos in our channel and we keep adding more and more of them will be incredibly useful for you. Patrick Nazar listened to Nehan Erkidi in the Kafka Summit 2018 keynote and said, I love it. I absolutely love it. A giant leap closer to the singularity, I tell you. Do you think that closer to the singularity is a good thing?
Yeah, that's a debatable.
Yeah, what if the singularity is terrible? I mean, there's no guarantees that it will be a good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult to see beyond the event horizon there.
Yeah. What if the robots turn all of us into paperclips? Like, the whole thing is very scary to me. I don't know if I want to do a giant leap, but yes. I kind of like that you think we did it. So. More near Nakidi feedback. This one was Kafka Summit 2017 keynote. Sayad Awesh Rahman said, Fantastic presentation and overview, really worth spending time watching it. Waiting for more, thumbs up to Confluent team. So I don't, definitely worth time watching this. You can also spend time watching other Kafka Summit presentations. They're all worth your time. Other keynotes, also worth your time. So yeah, don't just stop there. We have tons of content that is worth your time. KSQL and other stream processing tools in Kafka by Nick Dearden, which is probably our favorite SE. Yeah. He really does amazing presentations. And Siddharth Kotwal here says that he's a legend, which I tend to agree. I think he's quite legendary. His presentation skills are actually getting progressively better. I've seen him do kind of an intro to KSQL for our sales team. And like, I usually don't enjoy sales presentations that much. I felt a bit weird, but he just did an amazing job.
Yeah, it's terrifying that Nick's getting better at convincing people to do stuff.
Yeah, the thing is that he now practices all the time,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, I'm super happy. It's always good to see people getting better at something they're already ridiculously good at. Nehar Narkidi, Kafka Summit, London 2019. And now I'm sorry that we had 2017, 2018, and 2019. I feel bad for not doing it in the right order. Tusif Zaki said, I follow these summits and Confluent always surprises with new features, which is 100% true. Thank you for following the summit, Tusif Zaki, and thank you for your good question earlier on. I think the features are good. I think this keynote is worthwhile because it also really shares real life lessons from what we learned running in the cloud. So definitely a worthwhile watch right here. And for the same presentation, Abel Morello said, I'm excited to try Confluent Platform. That's fantastic. You may even be excited to try Confluent Platform in the cloud, in which you can get started in about 30 seconds and just create a cluster and use all the control center features and KSQL and connect and everything in with very usable interface. Okay, I think that's about it. Enough patting ourselves in the back, right?
Yeah.
That was lots of fun. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
And I think it's time to go back and build more control center features, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Hey, you know what you get for listening to the end? A Kafka Summit discount code. Kafka Summit is coming up on September 30th and October 1st in downtown San Francisco. And you can get 30% off if you go to kafka-summit.org and use the discount code AUDIO19 during checkout. Just enter AUDIO19 while registering at kafka-summit.org, and that 30% off is all yours. I'd love to see you there. But hey, I hope this podcast was helpful to you. If you want to discuss it or ask a question, you can always reach out to me at TL Berglund on Twitter. That's TLBERGLUND. Or you can ask Gwen at Gwen Schaap. That's GWENSHAP. Or you can leave a comment on a YouTube video or reach out in our community Slack. There's a Slack sign-up link in the show notes if you want to register there. And while you're at it, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and to this podcast wherever fine podcasts are sold. And if you subscribe through iTunes, be sure to leave us a review there. That helps other people discover the podcast, which is a good thing. Thanks for your support, and we'll see you next time.